straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first, On Second Thought.
On Second Thought, episode 261, brought to you by Hook'em.com and our good friends at Bud Light. Cedric Golden here with the Duck, Kirk Bowles. And Duck, on our little podcast, we have to reward greatness. And when you sweep the Big 12 outdoor championships, like the Texas Longhorns did, we have to get the coach on. Coach Flo, Edric Floreal joins us. Coach, congratulations, and how's it going today?
It's going great, and thank you.
Man, life is good if you're a member of the men and women's track team. Sweep, sweep, Cedric. Men and women, sixth time in history this has happened. Texas has done it five times. Nebraska is the only other one to do it. So you must be on top of the mountain, right, Edric?
Now, in athletics, you're never on top of the mountain. As soon as you do that, somebody's knocking you down. So I like to keep myself in the very bottom and feel like I'm climbing.
Well, man, I'm a huge fan of the sprints, and you guys got it done. Or particularly Micaiah Harris pulled off the sprint double. The girls always like it when you win the 100 and then you come back later and win the deuce. I've heard that. I don't know about that. I've never done it. But he ran a 9.93 in the 100. First Longhorn to win since the great Jamal Charles.
Been
won it in 06. And then he comes back later, goes 19.72 in the 200 for the first time in Big 12 history and the second time overall a Longhorn has done that, the last to do that double, Johnny Lamb Jones.
Royalty.
In 1977, and we all know who that is. What's the upside for Micaiah, Coach?
Micaiah actually is just coming into his own. That's the cool part, is that he's been a little bit banged up and just trying to get himself healthy. He had a rough Olympic year. You know, the Olympics are tough, man. If you don't make that team, your world crashes and you're just in a tailspin. So he bounced back from that and really had a rough time. If you look at his indoor times, they were not consistent with what he could do. So he really struggled. But then, you know, finally we got them together and then finally started kind of getting his self-confidence back and he's just unstoppable now, which is cool to see that a kid can sort of overcome just not making the Olympic team, and that was his lifelong dream. So he's in a good place. And our goal is just to make the World Championship team, win the NCAA, and hopefully try to get him a professional contract. This is his last year, so if he can make it and get a pro contract, that would tickle me to death, because the kid has been through a lot. He struggled, he's battled with some adversity, and just watching a good kid, a good teammate, a great leader. I mean, that dude keeps the team together, and he's done that even if he's running well or running poorly. So I just want to see him succeed, because it will be just a heck of a story.
Well, how overjoyed was he in Lubbock sweeping those two events?
If you know him, that guy doesn't crack a smile very often. They posted a picture of him in for Athlete of the Week, NC Athlete of the Week. And the picture that they posted, one of his teammates said, you look like you're one of those bad kids. He's just got sort of the no emotion face, just blah. And that's all his pictures. He's just not, you know, outside of his teammates and goofing around, which he has a PhD in goofing around and doing dumb stuff at practice. But outside of that, he's a very private kid. He has a small circles of, that's the teammates, that's his family. He's not a usually jump up and down guy. His first thing is, I know I messed up this and I know I messed up that. God, dog, I could have done much better. So he's just a different kid to coach. You know, the relationship between coach and athlete is important to him. He's just not a highly emotional kid like some of the rest of our kids.
Is he just scratching the surface how good he can be?
We've talked about how good he could be for a long time, and I don't think he's believed it. You know, it's actually probably poetic justice that the whole dang Flo knows thing comes out, because most of those kids don't ever believe me. They all think I'm insane. We're talking about you know, Kavona Davis running fast, and she's like, "You're crazy. You know, I'll be just be glad to run 11.1." And she's like, "We had talked about her running exactly that 10.8 in 21 seconds." So, and Mikhail was the same place. You know, he knows he's good, but just watching that clock, I think for a guy that's kind of, you know, cool, he his eyes popped open like, whoa, 19.7. And so it was good to see him sort of, you know, like get excited just for 1 second.
You know, when you look at track, especially the sprints, a lot of these guys get jacked up and they're very intense. Yeah, you know, Usain Bolt was into Carl Lewis, Ben Johnson with the steroids. Mm-hmm. He was very intense. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like you got some low-key sprinters on the team, and that's working out for them.
It is. You know, it's almost like just trying to manage the highs and the lows, just try to keep it even keel. And most, you know, most of that stuff is just personality. You know, after Bolt got comfortable, he was extremely playful and completely engaging with the spectators once he got comfortable. It takes a bit to get to that point. The kids here, I would probably say Kavona, our sophomore, she gets fired up. Kennedy Flanagan gets fired up. But the rest of them, you'll be lucky if they do a fist pump, man. They're just not, you know, that's just not the thing. I mean, I don't know, maybe I attract cool, calm people. they don't, you know, you look at Mekhi behind the line before the 100, you don't know if he's going to a funeral or he's going to run the 100. And the gun goes off and he unleashes all kind of hell on people. But before the race, if you span across the start line, you look at the kids, our sprinters, you know, and then that's what we've talked about, just kind of staying within yourself. And I think in the past, we haven't performed well because the kids have sort of lost control of their emotions. So we work really hard on just like, you know, maintain your emotion, be completely aware of what you're about to do. Review the race in your mind over and over until you feel like you got it down pat. And then you just basically unleash hell when the gun goes off. So just try not to get, because you get too high, you're going to come back down. And the coming back down is no bueno. So you got to make sure that you just completely keep it calm, even killing. When the gun goes off, you just got to unleash hell on everybody else.
Well, that's interesting. You said about the sprints is that Texas hadn't dominated the sprints in a long time. And like Cedric said, I mean, winning the 100 first time since Jamal Charles in 06 and sweeping, you know, the first time since Johnny Lamb Jones. I don't even know. I know you know who Johnny Lamb Jones is. I was there when he won the state.
I went to his funeral. I was at his funeral.
I did too.
We were there
as well.
That was a cool moment.
I don't know how old you were when 1977, you probably weren't born yet, but.
Yeah, unfortunately I was. I think I was about 12 years old. So I've been around.
Are we the same age? Were you born in 65?
No, I'm 66.
I'm December 65. We're pretty close in age.
Pretty close. Yeah.
I don't look as young, but that's okay. I've lived a hard life, sir.
Me either.
But you're back to dominating the sprints, which is good to see. And so you put a lot more emphasis on the sprints and some of maybe the long distance races like, you know, Arkansas has always done through the years, which you're well familiar with.
Yeah. You know, I think location really determines what you're going to be good at. You don't really get a chance to choose what you're going to commit yourself to because your location dictates it. If you look at when I was at Arkansas with Johnny Mack and Coach Mack, used whatever was at his fingertips. You know, there were times where Arkansas was good in distance and jumps, the time they were good at distance and sprint, but the mainstay was always distance. So in the location, Fayetteville, lots of hills, lots of beautiful trails, it makes sense for a distance runner to go there. Now, Austin, Texas, 100 degrees in the summer, if you got to run 80 miles a week, this is probably not your ideal location. I want to go to school in Austin. So, and then, you know, you got to get out of town to get a good run in because it's going to be sort of a concrete jungle. For us, being great in the middle distance is going to be difficult because the very best middle distance runners are going to want to go to Oregon where the climate is a little bit more forgiving. There's 60 degrees and there's a lot of trails, a lot of good, healthy running places, which we're not going to have. So what we've done is basically focused on kids who are local, like kids who are from Texas. They're used to the heat, and they've competed the state meeting the heat. They're training the heat. So to them, it's not as big as a shock, which means we're not going to attract sort of the superstars of middle distance. But in the sprints, sprinters hate to be cold. So for a sprinter, 100 degrees is heaven. You know, they don't have to warm up as long, and they don't have to keep warming up in between events. So for us, throwers, sprinters, hurdlers, multi-events, those are the event areas that fit sort of the temperament of the location of Austin, Texas. You know, the healthy urban campus, sprinters love that. You know, they don't want to be in a campus that's in the middle of boondocks that you know, there's that 30-mile radius, there's nothing around. So this environment is sort of facilitate what a sprinter's into. You know, they're a little bit more outgoing, running around, and some of them maybe too much on my team, but they enjoy their weekends, and that's kind of what they do. And so I think the location, Austin, the weather, really dictates for us that we're going to attract the very best sprinters, hurdlers, jumpers, throwers, multi-events, and that's kind of what we're good at. Those are the event areas that fit what the University of Texas is sort of stands for.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, shout out to Trip Preparing, won his ninth Big 12 shot put title. I want to talk a little bit about the ladies. Christine Blazevica, heptathlon champion, undefeated in conference meets. She's won all four multi-competitions she's competed in. What's her upside as far as, you know, the Olympics are concerned? Because you guys always seem to bring some good heptathletes to the table.
Yeah, I mean, now Christine is probably going to be an Olympian in Paris. Her development is just heading that way. I mean, she should have scored 6,200 points. We made a couple of mistakes in a couple of events where we, like long jump, we didn't hit the board. And the 200, we had an outside lane and didn't have anybody that we can run off of. So there were a few things that sort of bad luck. But I thought she could have broken Ashton's record. But she's a Latvian. So for us, it's just getting her to make her Olympic team. And for the Olympics, you have to hit a standard 6,400 points. So until you hit that mark, you can't go. But for Latvia, I believe they will take her if she goes 6,200 points because they're not going to have tons of athletes going. And then that's our ultimate goal for her. So right now, the World Championship looked to be unlikely. So she'll compete in the European Championships this summer. And then next year's World Championship, I think she'll qualify for that. And then obviously the Paris Olympics is the ultimate goal for her. But yeah, we always have a good heptathlete. I mean, Ashton left and enters Christine, and we got a couple more we're working on the recruiting stand. But, you know, that's what fits. You know, it's just we got jumpers and we got people from the islands. They're not going to go to, you know, New York University because it's too daggone cold. But so that's kind of what we are. And then Trip, obviously, I mean, Trip is my guy. I mean, it's he somehow tells me that you know, he's my son now. Yeah, he told my son they were hanging out, and he says, we are brothers. And my son says, no, we're not. He says, yeah, you are, because your pops is not my dad, so we're brothers, not, you know.
He's been here long enough.
He sure has. You know, it's like he's been here for years. So, I mean, you're supposed to win 8 conference championships, but Trip has not. Fine. So you do the math. You say, wait a minute, you got 4 years of eligibility, 1 indoor, 1 outdoor. 9? How do you get 9? So the COVID year gave him an extra year. And you know, shout out to Trip, big time. Trip, you know, has been sort of the foundation of our success. He's been the guy, steady Eddie. Every meet, every championship, the guy shows up. He always shows up. And I think it's important to watch that consistency and give him his kudos. You know, when the team wasn't at the very greatest, he was still getting it done. So I always think that this is the guy that sort of kept us, you know, top 10 NCAA, even when our team was in all around good to where we are now. So, and there's actually on Twitter, there's a picture of Trip celebrating right before we knew we won the championship. And I'm thinking he's going to tear his Achilles because he's jumping up and down so high. And I'm thinking, oh, he's going to get hurt. And he takes off running and the teammates are trying to hug him. They think he's going to hug them. He's knocking him left and right, elbow on, but it was the best moment watching him, because when I got here, one of the things he told me he wanted to do is say, I really want to win a national championship. And I told him, well, I'll give you my word, we're going to get one before you get out of here. So just watching him that moment was really cool. Just watching a guy that's been at the program so long that could have left when things changed, when new head coach come in. He could have left one somewhere else. There were a lot of programs that he could have went because he was so good. He decided to stay and continue to be a Longhorn, and watching him, watching us fulfill our promise to giving him a national championship was the best moment for me.
Awesome. Well, we talked about the men's sprint. We didn't talk about Julian Alford winning the 100, third fastest time in history, breaks Carla Guidry's 31-year-old record.
Wow.
Say about
her. That's huge.
That's huge.
She was at the state track meet, Carlette. I saw her. Yeah.
I just talked to her last week. We were talking just about the state meet and some people running. But, yeah, I mean, Juju actually done a fantastic job. If you think about how much she broke that record by and how long it stood, I mean, she ran 81. I think it was like 90-something, 10.92 and 92 that Carlette had won. But to stand that long, it's hard to run sub-11. It's also a mental thing to break that barrier. And once you break it, it's easier. And Juju also has the collegiate record indoor in the 60. So she's had a really good year. And she's one that I'm just trying to get her to celebrate. You know, she runs 1081. She walks back, grabs a glass of water, and comes over and hugs me. And I'm like, that's it. You know, fist bump. You know, a little tap dance, a little moonwalk, you know.
She needs to call Davis, Tara Davis.
Oh, no, we got Tara Giddens. Tara Giddens is actually worse. You come to practice, you believe you're in some type of Caribbean disco area. She got the music blasting.
Nice.
And she full-blown dancing. Like, what are you doing? But again, I think good teams, great teams have personalities. And as a head coach, you just got to let people be who they are. So I made this a long time ago, but I'm not going to try to adapt kids to fit to the program. We're just going to find them a spot and fit them in. And sometime practice could be, it could be eventful. You know, guys are hanging out and laughing, and we got the Calypso now. I don't know if we're the University of Texas or Island Festival. So we got Jonathan from Barbados. You got Julian from St. Lucia. You got three or four Jamaicans. You got Stacy and you got Akilia. So they bring their music. And I've never heard music like that. But it's, we're playing this thing called soca now. That's what the team is into. They're playing soca music, and it's sound like a bunch of, I don't know, sound a bunch of chicken having a sword fight. Because I don't know what is going on. But
they're my thing.
No, not my. They're playing soca. And then I think Mondays is reggae. And I think we get a rap day in there, I think Tuesday. But it's just watching that many people from that many different backgrounds and areas. We got, you know, Christina's from Latvia. And you got Dasha's from Latvia. We got Russians in there. And we got Canadians in there. And we got Gab Montefalcone's from Italy. And I mean, it's just wonderful to see that at a place like the University of Texas, you can have that many countries represented on the team and everybody looking like they're all from the same backyard.
It's a melting pot. I mean, you got a United Nations. Is there anybody, Edric, you want to brag on that really came the furthest and scored points and somebody who just really hadn't tapped their potential yet that we should look out for?
I think there's a few of me. I think Kennedy Flannel struggled. She hadn't had her regular KB year, but she's coming into her own. She's taking a long detour to get to where she should have been. But we're in a good place now as far as confidence and feeling good about herself. You also have, you know, so many of them. You got Kennedy Simon and you got Stacey Ann Williams is on the verge of breaking 50 seconds. Both of them should. And you got, well, the monster, probably Rashida Adeleke is a 19-year-old that's, you know, she has every national record from Ireland other than 100. She has the 60, the 200, the 400, and the 300. She's only missing the 100. And wow. She also has the junior record. So you're talking about a 19-year-old has every national record but one of the country. All of them. And then she just ran 50. Yeah, she just ran 50 seconds. This was her first 400 outdoor, and she ran 50.7, which is sixth in the NCAA. But again, she's run anything from the 100 to the 400 and is in the top 10 in the nation in all three of them and top 20, 15 in the world in all of them. So she's just a special, unique time. She's also 6'1", tall. We're talking about a sprinter who is reminiscent of Bolt. You don't have sprinters, male, who are 6'5", and certainly not females who are 6'1", but she's 6'1". Yeah. And you can do anything from the 60 to the 400. So, and she has, I mean, she's Ireland's greatest hope for any sprint medal ever. Got her, guys, you got the little young girl from Jamaica, Akelia Smith, who has broken the triple jump record indoor and outdoor, and they were both stood for 39 years, and she's 18 years old. So she's
wow,
school record holder in the triple jump indoor, school record holder in the triple jump outdoor, and both of those records stood for almost like 40 years. So she's done that. Golly. Val Tobias is having a heck of a year. She keeps taking a couple of stumbles, but she's having a tremendous year. Yeah, man, I can go all day. You got Brooke Jaworski. We just have a really good team. You know, like the idea, I have like most championship groups have like 4 or 5 athletes. Mm-hmm. But our team covers this, you know, all track and field. You got throwers, you got sprinters, you got hurdlers, you got distance runners. You just sort of have all of it. And they're all at the highest level. Oh, Creighton Carroza, Yusuf Bizimana, I mean, Yassine Abdallah. I mean, we're just fortunate that they have developed some really quality young people.
And you go to Arkansas like in a week or so for the prelims, your old stomping grounds.
Yes.
How are you looking at that going forward?
Yeah, the prelim round is difficult because you don't actually win anything. You just advance. You know, right. It's like, I'm just not a big fan. I think anytime you run something or participate, you should win something. But right. Going to a round to a place where you just run into advance, so just, again, managing your performance. You go out there and run crazy and get yourself tired. You got 10, 8, 9 days later, you got the NCAA championship. So you really don't want to go there and go crazy. You just want to do the job. You know, you want to run as fast as you possibly can to advance, but not as fast as you would at the NCAA. So somebody that runs like really, really fast at the preliminary round, you got a recovery of 6-7 days. You're not going to be able to come back. So, you know, our plan is just do the least amount possible in advance. You know, if you can advance with 12 seconds flat, great. If you have to run 10-8, then run 10-8, but only if you have to. So our goal is just to advance to the NCAA and then conserve as much of our energy as possible. So when we get to the NCAA, we're not sort of like emotionally burnt out.
Right.
The NCAA's or outdoor track and field championships will be at Hayward Field, venerable Hayward Field, Eugene, Oregon, June 8th. It's 14 times going to be held there. And they just redid that place, didn't they? Yeah. They spruced it up, didn't they, Coach?
Yeah, it's a brand new facility. They laid out new rubber too. Everything is brand new. The stadium is really gorgeous. They've actually well thought, well designed. They have warm up areas under the stadium. It's a really cool place as far as the design and the implementation of it. And the scoreboard is kind of like really funky, so it's kind of fit the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a different place. It hadn't been as packed as it's been in the past, but. But the kids, I think, understand the magic of Hayward Field and sort of mystique of running at a place that has a long-standing history with track and field.
Aren't the Worlds coming there?
Then we got the World Championships there. So we got NCAAs there. We got the U.S. World Championship Trials, and we got the World Championship there. And that's the first time in history that we're hosting a World Championship in U.S. soil. So there's going to be a lot of magic there.
Well, I got to ask you about a kid I got to meet last weekend at State Track, Brennan Thompson from Spearman.
Yeah.
Blew up the track, won the 100 in 10.24, comes back, wins the deuce in 20.73. He's coming to Texas.
That's right.
He's excited. He's moving. He will be moving to Austin in 2 weeks. Right now he's fishing in Alabama. What can you tell us about Brennan? Because he seemed like a great personality.
He is. I think the best thing about him is, you know, again, we're getting a guy that has personality. He's not one of those shy guys. He's definitely not Makai. Makai is very reserved, but that guy is not. You know, he's very outgoing, and that I think is going to help our men's team just to have a guy that has sort of that energy. He has tons of energy. He is wide open, and he's just completely comfortable with his own self, and he's fast. I mean, speed helps, speed kills. And just having a guy walking in already with 20.7 is exciting for me as a coach. And knowing that, you know, that soon as football is over, knock on wood, he can get out of there healthy and hopefully can get our football team to take care of some business. It'll be great to kind of watch him come out. You know, we got a big history of those guys. You got, you know, you got Eric Metcalf, you got Marquise, you got
Jamal Lamb.
Yeah, you got Johnny Lamb. It's just a big connection. So this is not a new, you know, this is not a new thing. Like a lot of people get their first track football guy. A track football guy is like, okay, so what? You know, this is new for us. So I'm excited about him because he's so talented. He can walk into the conference and be an NCAA qualifier. And
wow.
For these guys, that's huge. I mean, he should, progression-wise, it's going to take about 10-0 to make it to the NCAA and about 20.45 to make it to the NCAA. So if he comes in healthy and can develop, he should be able to do that as a freshman and make it to the NCAA.
Wow. Well, you won the men's indoor national championship. And I remember at your press conference afterward, you said, you know, we might even be better in the outdoor. And now you're sitting here poised. You got any prediction for the men and women in Eugene in a few weeks?
Well, the ultimate goal is to leave there with two trophies. And the shinier the trophy color is, the better. So obviously we don't mind silver and bronze, but we prefer gold. I think the kids know it too. I mean, that's the good thing when you're head coach and the athletes already know what's expected and have access. You know,
right.
They've taken that in, so it's not me beating them upside the head, convincing them to win the championship. They're talking about it 24/7. They know, hey, you need. Makai was telling one guy, you need to qualify, man, because we're going to need your points. So it's almost like they figured it out themselves that. Positioning ourselves as a team and everybody taking accountability, not just for themselves, for their own teammates, that you got to get yourself here. You got to get healthy. This guy got to do this. This guy got to do that. And everybody understand that we have a role and they have a role for us to be successful. And this is no longer me convincing them of their potential. They're fully aware of it. So I think we have a really good chance to win. We've been number one since week one, but I'd rather be number one leaving Eugene than be number one coming into Eugene.
I love it. Because if Texas track is even, they're leaving. They're winning. It's 10 Big 12 titles in 4 years. And stalking bigger game in Eugene. Coach, such a pleasure to talk to you today, man. Good luck over the next 2 weeks and keep those kids healthy.
Appreciate you. Thank you guys for having me.
You bet. Anytime. Keep listening to that music and make them celebrate a little bit more, okay?
Tell them to listen to some Prince. It might change their perspective.
Yeah. All right, man. All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Flo. Congratulations. Bye-bye.
On Second Thought.
Doug, just a great conversation with Coach Flo. They're flowing.
Oh,
Big 12 track. Is Texas's personal playground right now.
He's got so much personality. You can imagine how he does in living rooms recruiting because he just got some flavor. He brings it. He can
cool
relate.
Cool cat.
I love him. He's terrific.
Well, man, tonight the Texas baseball team is going to be back in Big 12 action. Let's just keep it real, Duck. They need a sweep. They need to sweep Kansas to enhance their chances, fading chances of hosting a regional. They're right outside that top 16 right now, Duck, and they're capable, but they cannot lose one game this weekend. That puts a lot of pressure on them. They are playing the worst team in the Big 12, right? Kansas is the worst, right?
They are, but I don't even think that's enough because, you know, if you finish fourth or fifth in your conference, you're probably not going to host a regional. I talked to Chris Del Conte this week, and he basically admitted they almost have to win out, you know, and either sweep Kansas and win the Big 12 tournament or at least reach the final. But, you know, it's such a jumble up at the top. Texas Tech goes into Stillwater, sweeps Oklahoma State.
That's crazy.
And TCU just mauls Kansas, you know, and scores like 53 runs against them. So I think it's probably a foregone conclusion that they're not going to host. And I think, but you and I have talked forever, they're going to be a dangerous road team that nobody's going to want to see come into their park. with those kind of hitters and that kind of power Texas has.
That's a nightmare. If you're hosting a regional and you find out Texas is coming, I mean, you're a good team if you're hosting.
Sure.
Like in Arkansas, where I've seen them projected to go play Palm State, right, which would be raucous, especially with the hatred that Arkansas has always had for the Longhorns. Just an out-and-out hatred. But do you are you really excited about Ivan Melendez and Murphy Staley and Hodo and Messenger and Pete Hansen coming to your crib? I'm not excited about that, Duck. I'm not.
No, me either. And I bet you right now they'll start Lucas Gordon that game one of the regional. And then, you know, because you'd rather him beat a number three seed than the number one host seed.
And come back with Pete.
Come back with Pete Hansen in game two if you win that first one. And then, you know, then it's on.
Then it's on like popcorn.
You try to outscore people after that. So, you know, and speaking of that, I mean, a couple of issues. One, Ivan Melendez, and two, you know, hats off to David Pierce for playing Sam Houston. Can't really help their RPI. And when teams like A&M and TCU and Texas State and Ole Miss and Liberty are all canceling games, personally, I find that to be a crock, you know. And they go, well, you got to do what's best for your team and you don't want to hurt your RPI. Well, then don't schedule the freaking game, okay? It's not fair to the opponents to say, yeah, you didn't have a good year. I mean, A&M was supposed to play Incarnate Word. I mean, I think, I don't know, who was it? TCU was
now supposed here's the cancellation row for our list. Yeah. Number six, A&M was playing Incarnate Word, canceled. Number 13, Texas State was supposed to play Houston Baptist, canceled. Number 24, TCU was supposed to play Tarleton State, canceled. SEC Power Ole Miss was supposed to play Arkansas State, canceled. Liberty was supposed to play High Point, canceled. You know what, Doug? David Pierce, a couple of weeks ago, they were rolling. And we were in the press box, and they had just won that series. What series was that? It wasn't the Oklahoma State. It was right after that.
Baylor.
They won the Baylor series, and they had a trip to the Rio Grande Valley, that was scheduled for Tuesday. There was a little bit of weather in the forecast, and we were talking. I was like, "You're not gonna go." I talked to David. I go, "Man, that weather's gonna be bad," and he goes, "We'll see." And the next thing you know, they went to Rio Grande Valley when they could have canceled. And because they had the momentum going, they took that 8-hour bus ride down to the valley, took care of business, and came back home. And now, and then, kudos, they beat Sam Houston State on Tuesday night, 9-2. And Melendez hit his 26th homer. He's too shy of Kyle Russell's school record. Check out hook'em.com. Danny Davis did a great, great story on Melendez's year. He's hitting 421, Duck. He's got 80 RBIs in 53 games, and he's got 26 home runs. He's a player of the year. That is not an easy ballpark to hit in. He is the national player of the year, I think. And I know he's got some competition. But, Duck, I mean, wire to wire, he has been absolute nails. One of the best mistake hitters I've ever seen. If you miss by an inch, most good hitters, if you miss by an inch, they will make you pay with a single. If you miss by an inch with this guy, he hits it out of the yard. I mean, I haven't seen too many like him.
He hit 421 with that many jacks. We ain't seen anybody like him. I mean, to hit for that kind of average when you know pitchers are pitching around you, it's amazing. He had one intentional walk, which is just defies my imagination that people
out there. Kudos to the opposing pitchers for coming after him, but it hadn't worked out for them.
Yeah, I think he's National Player of the Year, too. But just to go back to a second, I mean, again, I applaud David Pierce for being a stand up guy and playing those games. And to me, it's just ludicrous that these teams are canceling these games. I mean, Did A&M think Incarnate Word's going to be a big RPI opponent when they scheduled that? Did Texas State think Houston Baptist or TCU think Tarleton were going to be a top 20 program? No. So don't schedule it, okay? And I'm not saying you ought to call them forfeits or anything, but I give David Pierce a lot of credit for playing that. I really do. And I think it was good for them to play, to keep playing, because they won a couple games in West Virginia, didn't sweep, but they'd been off, you know, for academic reasons, for finals for like 10 days. So they needed to play too. So I think it's kind of dangerous precedent when you see these teams canceling these games.
Yeah, but I think they're going to come in with their hair on fire. And even if they don't host, if they can sweep Kansas and go into that Big 12 tournament, that's going to give them some momentum, knowing that if they can win two or three in the Big 12 tournament, get to the finals or win the whole, if they win the Big 12 tournament and sweep Kansas, Doug, they're hosting, I believe. They'll move up then.
If they do what, you think they'll host?
They sweep Kansas and win the conference tournament. I think.
If they win both of those, but
that's tough. That's a tough sell.
I don't think they got the pitching staff. To win they that don't. Tournament. No, I.
They'd have to get two complete games.
I think it's more important they keep Lucas Gordon pitching well. Lucas Harrison pitched out of a bases loaded situation on Tuesday. Got to get Tristan Stevens right and get
him. Hadn't been right all year.
He really could use a couple good outings in Kansas and the Big 12 tournament to get him right. And you want to be healthy. EK, Eric Kennedy's back in the field after his hamstring issues. So, I don't know. It's shaping up that they want to be healthy and they want to feel good and confident about themselves. So, I think they got a lot of stuff going for them. And even though it's been a lot of doom and gloom just because – you know, after that big start, 11-0 and number one in the country, they just haven't quite lived up to the billing, especially with pitching and the bullpen issues. But they still got a whole lot to play for.
Yeah, they do. They do. You were over softball on Tuesday.
Yeah, I went yesterday. Yeah, I did. They're going to Seattle. They were very miffed that they didn't get a regional host, one of the top 16s. I think their RPI was like 14. But they didn't play great. They lost 17-3 to Baylor, their next to last regular season game, and they
never should have gone to that game. You killed them that day. You murdered them.
Oh, I got that much clout, dude.
That was you. That was you.
Then they went 1-1 in the Big 12 tournament and lost to Oklahoma State. So you know they're miffed about that. But in truth, they have four first time hosts for women's softball. Three of them are in the ACC, believe it or not. Clemson, Virginia Tech, and Duke, and then UCF became the first mid-major in 6 years to host since James Madison did it. And they beat Texas head-to-head in that Clearwater disaster when Texas went 0-5. So they kind of don't really have a beef, but
they don't.
I was talking to Mary Iacopa this week, and she said, we think it's a real even regional, so we like our chances going into there. So they still got a lot to play for too.
Lots of Longhorn news, Doug. Baseball, softball, PGA championships starts today.
Yeah.
A resurgent Jordan Spieth might try to holler at Scotty Scheffler on Sunday. Spieth seems like he's kind of found himself lately. But how many times have we said that he's found himself? He'll win a little Rudy Poot tournament and then he'll mess up the bed, you know, at the major. Cause it's been a minute for Jordan, but it's good to see him putting well.
He's got a win, and he finished solo second at Byron Nelson, the TPC Craig Ranch, and which was kind of a joke of a course because Cage Lee won, 26 under par to win. Last year he won it 25 under par. They need to put some windmills or alligator heads or something in there. So I don't think we're going to see scores like that at Southern Hills and Tulsa. But you're right. It could be another Longhorn Invitational because Scotty Scheffler won a Big 12 title there. He shot a 64 to practice round a couple weeks ago, played well the Nelson. I'm kind of picking Jordan Spieth to win this. I like his confidence.
I will take that bet all day.
What do you got against Jordan Spieth?
He hasn't won.
Yeah, he just won a few weeks ago.
He won a major. What is he now?
A lot of people haven't won a major.
What is he, 26?
He hadn't won a major.
No. What is he, 26? And he won one, was it 4 years ago? Years
17,
ago?
British Open.
It's been a minute, Duck. It's been a minute since he's done that. And
He's driving the ball better. And this is a second shot course where iron play comes into play, and he's got his irons working pretty well, you know. Who you got? Who you picking?
I go Scotty. He's the best player. I know it's not sexy, and I know I'm not going out on any limbs, but I see a guy dominating the tour, and this is his season. And so, I go Scotty.
He's won the Masters. He's won 4 times already. Yeah. What's he going to win? 5, 6, 7 tournaments this
Maybe.
Year?
Tiger already did it.
Player of the year, probably.
Tiger did it. Why can't Scotty?
Tiger going to win it, you think? You got a chance?
Stop it. Stop.
I bet you he's
in a time machine. Jump in a time machine.
His leg's going to be stronger. It's not as hilly as Augusta. I bet he does better. He won it there in 07. When
That's
I was
15 years ago.
Covering it. So, but I think
10 years ago,
I don't think he'll win it either, but I think he's going to play a whole lot better.
Will he place in the top 10?
That was my crazy prediction. He's going to be in the top 10. So,
when did your predictions become so bland?
Top 10?
That's not crazy.
He was like 47th at the Masters.
At that, and walking uphill for 4 days. This course is way more Tiger friendly. That's I'm talking about 43-year-old Tiger friendly.
That's why I said in top 10. I don't think he's going to win.
That's not crazy, though.
Oh,
that's not crazy.
I could just pick
top five is crazy. Winning it, crazy.
I'm not going to pick an alternate to win the.
Your crazy predictions used to be way crazier than now. The older you get, you're working your way to the middle.
I don't want to work.
Get out of the middle and get back on the edge where I like you.
Yeah, but you don't do stupid stuff like, I'm going to pick the Jaguars.
If you said Tiger Woods finishes in the top three, that's a nice, crazy prediction.
Yeah, I just don't think he will. I want to believe it. I don't want to just throw it out there. You know,
do you really want me to go back and look at your past crazy predictions?
Sure.
And then I can ask you, did you really think that this would happen? Because you've made some really outlandish in the past. I know Rich Tirina has a list. So crazy means crazy. Now won't you change it to 9 things and 1 lukewarm prediction?
I like crazy. I'll try to get crazier for you then. I'll try to get crazier. Here's another crazy prediction. I'll write 9 things that is only 40 inches, not 50 inches. That is a crazy prediction.
That ain't working.
Do you watch the Celtics get dismantled by the Heat Tuesday night?
Yes, I did. And my, my son-in-law or my stepson, Al Horford, my nephew, whatever you want to call him.
Wasn't playing.
After he had that huge game, he didn't play. And
no Marcus Smart.
Yeah. The Heat looked great.
They
looked great.
Let me ask you a question. Is Jimmy Butler the most unsung superstar in the NBA? The most
I was trying to think of a guy like him from back in the day that was just really great and didn't always get the props.
Yeah.
I did come up with one name, because he was so low key, but his numbers are great. John Stockton was amazing, but he's a dream teamer. I don't know that Jimmy Butler would be a dream teamer in today's game. He doesn't get the publicity of a Jason Tatum or a Luka or a Joker or a Greek Freak. But he has been absolutely incredible, and he's the best two-way player in the NBA right now.
Oh my God, how many blocks?
Joel Embiid's a great two-way player too, but Jimmy Butler, man, you don't think he's going to give you that, and then he gives you 40 time and time again. He is ever since they had that little fiasco, that little brawl with where he threatened to fight the coach.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he has been nailed. He has been nailed. And he's not a guy you think of when you're listing the best players in the league. And I have to point this out. He is a proud alumni of Tyler Junior College, which produced Sid Golden. So, yeah.
So where's your NBA ring?
What's my what?
Where's your NBA ring?
Where's my ring?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
All these Tyler JC products. I mean, I love Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler may be my favorite player in the NBA because he brings it on both ends of the court. 41 points in 41 minutes. He's guarding Tatum, blocking Tatum's shots. And shout out to PJ Tucker, who's still getting it done. And I love him. He's, you know, he's got that corner 3-point shot down, and he's kind of a nice Patrick Beverly, if you will, because he's an antagonist. He's going to get under your skin and just plays tough and hard. And what a career PJ Tucker's had, former Longhorn.
I can remember covering him in the G League and wondering if he was going to be mature enough. Cause I remember one of the, I won't name the coach, but one of the coaches that he played against told Dennis Johnson, who, rest in peace, DJ, your guy's got to grow. It's time for your guy to grow up. I mean, because PJ was kind of immature at first. And I noticed when I was covering the game that they were backing off of him, and he couldn't make that 3-point shot to save his life. He didn't have that kind of range. He was an inside player at Texas, and he's made himself a great pro.
He really has. He's had a terrific career. He really has. And it just seemed like the team he plays on is a winner. You know, he did it in Houston, and maybe hadn't won at all, but boy, his teams are scrappy and fighting. He exemplifies toughness. So shout out to PJ.
Who you picking to win it?
You know, I love the underdog, but it'd be nice to see the Mavs. I can't root for Golden State and Draymond Green and, you know, all the superstars they have. So I'm going to root for Dallas. I think, they've been dismissed, I think. Everybody thought Game 7 in Phoenix, they're going to get taken out. And, boy, Phoenix didn't show up.
Chris Paul, man.
DeAndre Ayton didn't show up. But
Booker didn't show up. Talked all that noise and didn't show up.
I know.
He had Luka hitting threes and laughing at him and giggling. You talk about a baby face killer.
I know.
Oh my God, that guy gives you 40 and he's laughing at you and smiling and he's pretty, and you're like, this guy's a killer. He's a killer. An absolute killer.
Wouldn't it be nice to see Dallas win with a Brunson and a Spencer Dinwiddie? I mean,
it would be history repeating itself. I'm not going to say that Dirk didn't have a superstar, because he had Tyson Chandler, who was a defensive player of the year in this league. But this is about as close to a one-man gang of all the teams that are left in the playoffs. I think Jimmy Butler is a one-man gang. I mean, they're deeper. The Heat are deeper. They have good complementary pieces. Tyler Hero's the sixth man of the year, and Bam Adebayo's a good young big man, but he's undersized. But if you look at the Mavericks, and it's Luka and just a bunch of dudes. I mean,
there
are no all-star guys on that team besides Luka.
I know it. So anyway, I look forward to it. I hope Dallas gives them a run for their money. I'm afraid Golden State's going to have too much firepower.
You think if the Mavericks make it to the NBA Finals, that one of us might get to sneak up to Dallas and –
I don't know if we can still get a credential. It's probably too late.
Yeah, it might be. It might be too late. We'll see.
But you never know.
They just got to win a series. So
yeah, you're right.
We'll see. Well, that'll do it, folks. We appreciate you stopping by and checking us out. That's it for 261. Big thanks to Texas track coach Edric Florial, Coach Flo with the Big 12 outdoor men and women's titles. We will do it up again next week. For the Duck, I'm Sid Golden. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Sid and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.